Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we're rocking and rolling in season 10. Today, we're going to be talking about episode 4. But before that, I believe we have a leftover from episode 3. So our leftover was the Amazon Kindle Fire.
Oh, yes. Did you buy one since yesterday?
Yeah, I went and bought one. I do have a Kindle, but not an Amazon Kindle Fire. So a very cursory look on the internet shows that the Amazon Kindle Fire still exists. They are still out there selling these knockoff iPads. I guess that, you know, it's on Model 10, it looks like. So
wow. They're still. Now that's what I call Amazon Fire 10.
And Bits is right. It is essentially just a competitor to the iPad. It is not the same, like, what is it, Paperwhite reading tablet that I use?
Yes. Yeah, that's what we have.
But no, it turns out Apple has not driven them into the ground yet. So good for you, Amazon, largest corporation in the world.
Yeah. Just a little upstart.
I guess there's a little staying power. Seattle upstart. fitting that it's Seattle, because here we are. That was my only leftover that I can think of. The only thing we want to make sure you guys all do is like, subscribe, review this podcast. If you are listening to us from Spotify, from Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, if you would be so kind or have the opportunity to, please throw us some stars, a review. We are open to what's it? Critical feedback? No. Constructive criticism.
What's the word? Yeah, we're open to it. I'm sure.
I guess maybe we're here to hear your thoughts, but like not really. Although my mom did tell us our episodes could be shorter, which sort of like was kind of mean. But I guess you're right, Mom. I know you're listening. Thank you for listening.
Well, with that being said, I think we should get into today's ep then.
Yeah, let's begin.
Okay, Nancy, we're going all the way back circa 1950s today. But before we get there, amuse-bouche reactions.
This one was fun. I like when they have to recreate stuff that they have like no visual reference for. I did think it was interesting. I feel maybe this is like a later seasons thing, but I was surprised that they weren't like treated to a meal at the restaurant and like given the opportunity to ask questions and talk. Mm-hmm. Like the restaurant clearly like had some product placement in this episode, and we didn't really get a lot about it. We didn't even really get many establishing shots of the restaurant that they were recreating, and it's clearly a very famous restaurant. So that was my only piece of constructive criticism for the production team of 15 years ago. But overall, it was a fun time.
Yeah, I my takeaway is I really liked this episode. I think when I go to critique it, I'm like, wait, we just watched this episode last week. Like, the format of this, and I'm speaking specifically to the elimination challenge, but yet again, we have an elimination challenge where the chefs have a very opinionated menu that they need to
cook,
which is kind of crazy. Like, we don't even see that many episodes like this in a season, and we are seeing two kind of back to back. I mean, all that being said, it was still really fun to watch, mostly from the nostalgia. But if it weren't for that nostalgia and it was a similar format, I think I would have been like tired, a little fatigued of this approach.
Yes, I agree. But before we even get to that, this episode opens up with a sort of like Bravo-esque to be continued from the previous episode where we have John Tesar and Josh.
Because you're a prick.
Whose last name?
I love that. I love his delivery of that.
Yeah. Anyway, we just see them fighting. Pretty much, John Tesar made a pretty disparaging remark about Kuniko after being eliminated, after she was eliminated. And he essentially says, like, well, if she were a better chef, she wouldn't have been eliminated. And everyone's like, is that really necessary? Like, she just got told that she was the worst of the day. And she wasn't in the room. But it just was so gratuitous. Yeah. What did you think of this fight between them?
He clearly was just saying something to say something. Like, it was so out of left field, like inappropriate, even by 2012 standards that it was annoying. It was annoying that people like took the bait, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm kind of glad that they did, because like, what, you're going to just like let that comment linger in the air? I don't know. You kind of have to address
it. Unsportsmanlike. But anyway.
Yeah, it was super weird.
As a result of this comment, we keep hearing these like little crumbs about how John Tesar is the most hated chef in Dallas. So I was like, okay, it's time to understand what the fuck is up with John Tesar.
The man, like, the legend.
Why his reputation is so bad. So I took it upon myself to read the famous Dallas magazine article where
did you use your Kindle?
My Kindle Amazon.
Did you set a clock for 5 minutes and research as much as you can on why he's an asshole?
Pretty much. And then I had to cook a dish. So I read the article, and top line here, he's got a mouth on him. He's a really opinionated guy, and he doesn't shut up. But I'll just give you.
I thought only said that when it was a woman. She's got a mouth on her. I've never heard it with a man. Yeah, look at us, 1950s.
Yeah, equality for insults. Everyone, men and women should be able to be insulted.
They should both equally be able to have mouths on them like that. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just like so giddy by this episode. Tell us about what you learned.
Okay, so here's what I learned about John Tesar. He was at a restaurant in Dallas called The Mansion for a long time. It was a very famous restaurant. And he had a very sudden departure from this restaurant. And he was there for 2 years. And in that time, there were tons of rumors about him like throwing tantrums in the kitchen and throwing pots and pans, apparently sleeping with socialites, drinking on the job.
Wow.
Like, he's doing the bad boy of the food industry to a T.
Okay.
And then, so after he left very suddenly, he had like a series of short stints places. He went to New York, where he worked at a steakhouse. Then he did a consulting gig. He had a tumultuous gig with Dallas Chop House and Dallas Fish Market, which included allegations of popover-related violence.
Popover? What does that mean?
You know what a popover is? It's kind of like a Yorkshire pudding.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just like wasn't expecting to hear it in that context. But no, I'm not familiar with that, and doubly so now.
Popover-related there used violence. To be a great restaurant in New York City called Popover Cafe that I went to in high school. But anyway, so I'm my guess is that he threw a popover, like a hot popover, at someone.
That's lethal now that I know what they are.
It's hot, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, so like, he's clearly like a violent and mean guy. The article opens up with an anecdote of him getting into a physical fight with a critic at his restaurant and the police having to be called. And in general, I would say that this is a good summation of John Tesar's reputation. The consensus being that he's a talented chef, but he's also a narcissistic sociopath, with his calloused index finger always hovering above the self-destruct button.
Oof. That is some strong use of the English language.
Not surprising that he went in on Kuniko, who was the sweetest, nicest gal on the show.
Yeesh. Well, eventually we'll cover where he's at now. I'm very excited to hear. but let's not spoil it, shall we?
We shall not. So yeah, let's begin with the episode. We have a fun quickfire. Do you want to talk about how
we do
it went down?
And it's for immunity this week. So, the challenge this week, the chefs have to butcher a cut of beef and then create a dish with that cut. They have an hour to do that. We have a guest judge, Naomi Pomeroy, the executive chef of Beast.
Yes. And Naomi has actually very recently tragically passed. She died over the summer in July 2024.
Oh, wow.
And many Top Chef guests, production alumni, expressed their deepest and sincerest sadness for her passing. She was, I believe, an incredible force in the food industry, and everyone really respected her. She died by drowning, which is incredibly sad. We're honestly going to move past that because it's so sad. But we respect and pour one out for a real one, Naomi.
Yeah. And this was a really fun challenge. So, pretty instantly, I mean, I will say that when we have challenges like this where knives are flying in a literal sense, I'm always kind of shocked by just the sort of cavalierness of the operation. The only rule they had was like only two people butchering at a time, which I was like, okay. So we see like we have like some amazing shots of people just like removing these massive like hunks of literal cattle from swinging meat hooks and slamming them onto the, like the metal prep tables and then just like hacking away at it. So yeah, it was like a full all hands on deck type situation. I mean,
you know me, my favorite thing about Top Chef is like watching them do technical skills that home chefs do not have.
Yeah, it's amazing. And
seeing them like butcher this cow, like knowing where the cuts are. Like everyone has seen that diagram of a cow and like with the dotted lines of where these cuts are, but like it was incredible
to watch it happen.
Going in and doing it.
So let's talk about some of the cuts that people got. Starting at the top, we have Brooke. She got the hanger steak, which was a favorite of Naomi's, as we came to learn when they were driving by for some bites. It was a bit rare for her. She seemed, on the whole, Naomi seemed to like really like her meat well done.
Well done. I know. I was like, Naomi, that might be a you problem.
I'm surprised for someone whose like whole thing is like restaurant is called Beast. But
yeah, also because like even just the images of the meat, it all looked perfectly cooked to me. And of course, yeah, we're not maybe there. But like a now thing. Nothing looked raw in any way.
Yeah. So I think Brooke was very happy about that. She wanted that cut. We had Carla doing something that felt kind of old school to me. She did the sirloin medallions wrapped in bacon with like Asiago risotto marsala sauce. Like, whoa. Like,
yeah, old Italian. School. That's like, first off, heart attack on a plate.
Yeah, bacon wrapped medallion.
Bacon wrapped sirloin. Red meat with Asiago cheese. Like, yeah. Whoa, baby.
Asiago, too.
You are taking a long nap after that meal.
Oh, my God, dude. Okay.
But I think that she did kind of well on that one. We also – so there were a lot of good-looking dishes. I thought – I really liked the vibe of CJ's tartare. I'm big on beef tartare right now. I think it's so tasty. We had both Micah and John doing the oxtail, and they both had pretty good reviews of their oxtail.
Yep.
Then we had Sheldon doing the Kobe marinated round, which he got good marks on. Who else? Oh, let's talk about Stefan making a ravioli.
I mean, I kind of liked that he took it in a different direction. I don't know. I liked that. It was kind of nice to see something that was a bit off. I think the same could be said for, like, CJ doing a tartare felt interesting. Like, it wasn't just somebody that was, like, searing the meat and putting a vegetable on the side.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that sounded delicious to me.
I agree. And Bart went for the kidneys, which was, I feel like, strategic. Because it's probably, like, no one was going for that cut when it came to the butchering. And he knew he would stand out. I'm not sure that we really saw feedback for him. But on the top of this challenge, we had Josh, who made a shoulder meatball with polenta and pickled shallots. That we had CJ with his tartare. And we had John Tesar with his oxtail.
Which kind of crazy because this was like – these were the three people in the eye of this stew room storm, so to speak.
Yes. I think maybe that was a little production magic. I don't know. That's actually a bit
– yeah, that feels like really – that would be really invasive for them to do. But it was like, what are the odds of that, you know?
Yes.
And then John gets
on the bottom quickly. We had Tyler with his crudo. You don't hear crudo and red meat together all that often.
No, I wonder why he chose that word. Maybe just like
– he didn't want to call it tartare because his knife cuts weren't going to be as precise. I don't know.
Yeah.
But in general, it was underseasoned. Lizzie made a shank with roasted turnips. It was tough. Eliza made flank steak, well-cooked but a bad flavor combination.
Cherries again.
Cherries, get out of the cherries. They're not even like, we're not in the Midwest. Mm-mm. So all to say, yeah, kind of unfortunately, the villain got the glory this episode. John Tesar wins immunity.
This is the episode, like, in conjunction with the stew drama. Like, I know, you know, we're sort of like told, not shown, that John is an a-hole from day one.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we have that whole interaction that blows up. And he was annoying to me before then because his persona was like a real, like, gosh, shucks, me, like, kind of annoying.
Yeah, like false humility.
Yeah, and now he just is annoying in a very
He clearly can only put way. On, like, the good guy act for, yeah, so, for long so long before he explodes.
Just, yeah, he's in his lizard skin now. okay, well, so really fun, quick fire. Let's chat elimination challenge because, again, we have kind of a crazy situation. This is a cash elimination challenge, so the winner gets $10,000. It's also a double elimination challenge. So as we kind of alluded to earlier in our amuse-bouche, the challenge today was to revive the original menu from, is it Canlis or Canlis? I don't know if it's like a French. Canlis. Okay, not French. Yeah. Canlis in its original 1950s menu. So the idea being that a lot of this food has not been plated or made at this restaurant for some time, with the exception of a few dishes, which we'll talk about. The guest judges obviously are the owners and grandchildren of the original founder of the restaurant, Mark and Brian Canlis. And it's sort of thought of, or at least we're told, that it's kind of the birthplace of fine dining in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. So, Nancy, I don't know if you noticed this when the chefs were coming into the restaurant. Did you see the paper sign hanging in the window with like a C letter grade?
No.
Or was that like a logo of the restaurant?
Oh, we got to look up the logo of the restaurant.
I need you to look that up because I rewound it and it's still – there was – it looked to be like a paper like health –
Like
food and health, like, yeah, spore the inspection. In the window. And I was like, that can't be that. It must just be C for the restaurant. But it was like it was odd. So anyways, I was immediately distracted by that. But everything seemed fine. I don't know. It could be nothing. I just needed to double check that. And
I'm going to have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, rewind the tapes. We'll leftover that. Anyways, what were your vibes on this menu? What jumped out to you?
Well, here's what I'll say. I love a Caesar salad. Mm-hmm. So, I do think just in general, a signature salad is like a fun thing to have. When they were like, that's the hardest one to do because it's been on the menu forever. I didn't think about it that way. But then when they said it, I was like, oh yeah, whoever's taking that, like John Tesar should have taken that pretty much. But of course he's an asshole. So he didn't. In general, like the sound of this food, I'm like, yeah, that sounds like when I watch Mad Men, the shit that they eat, you know, yeah. Like this food is just truly of a bygone era. Like livers and marinated herrings and like mushrooms and onions being their own dish, like squab, you know, just all of this. It felt super dated, as I think was the general reaction of the diners. Like, whoa, blast from the past.
Like when – I love when we get a shot of the judges seated at the table and one of the dishes come out and Padma's just like, this just smacks of the 1950s.
I'm like, you weren't even born.
Yeah. So, okay, let's run through these dishes as they emerge. So the first kind of wave of plates we see, we have Brooks' seafood salad a la Louie. We have Chrissy's Canlis special salad. We have Josh doing the French onion soup. Mm-hmm. We have Lizzie and a marinated herring with a side of saltines. And then we have Tyler with the crab cocktail. To my earlier kind of critique of this episode, where I think we had the same thing last week, where there's some things on this menu that felt very opinionated and you need to do it exactly as has been specified versus other things feeling like, oh, it's more open to interpretation. I thought it was like pretty unfair that Chrissy was like held to the standard of what that salad is today.
Yes.
Whereas everybody else was like, wow, like Lizzie, it was like really cool what you did with the marinated herring. And like that was bold putting crackers on the plate. Like, I mean, you probably would have felt differently if that was still on the menu and she did it differently, like in Chrissy's case. So I don't know. That bothered me.
Yeah. I also wonder, and it gets back to my first point, my amuse-bouche about this. It's like, was she ever given the opportunity to try the salad as it is prepared in the restaurant? Right. Like, I guess if you read the ingredients on the menu, you should be able to know what it's supposed to taste like. But
and I mean, I guess it was overdressed.
Yeah, I'm going to say, like, maybe the salad was bad. Like, they said it wasn't tart enough. I love a really lemony Caesar. Like, it is possible that it was just a bad salad, but I agree with you. Like, it just felt like it was a – it would have made sense if they were like, you guys are going to cook everything but the one dish that is still served today.
Yeah.
Because it felt like she was being judged in a different standard.
Yes.
Yeah. But so Brooke's seafood salad got nice reviews. Everything was cooked well. The herrings, they loved. They loved the marinated herrings. And I will say they commented that they liked it being served with the cracker. I do think saltines are like a very underrated premier cracker.
Yeah. They're so flaky, but they're not – and they're buttery, but they're not
– but it's not like a Ritz.
Right. It's – I completely agree. I thought that was super smart. They're
really
actually
good neutral cracker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without being bland.
They are. That's my anti-judgy table. Yeah. And I was really happy to see Tyler doing well because I think he was really tripped up after last episode.
Yes.
So that felt great to see. This – honestly, this first group, with the exception of maybe Josh and Chrissy, super strong. And I think most of the judges liked everything they tasted. Let's get into sort of the like entree course. So we had Bart with the New York steak, double cut New York steak. Carla had the whole milk fed squab. Crazy. CJ did shish kebab with pilaf. Josie had the quote gargantuan potato.
Oh yeah, those were insane.
Huge. Kristen did the sautéed French mushrooms, fried onions. Sheldon, Hawaiian mahi-mahi with beurre blanc. Stefan, grilled liver crispy with crispy onions made by Kristen, actually. I think somewhere in there was John with the steamed Bordelaise clams, who also kind of like signed up to be the, expediter.
Expediter. It's sort of like CJ in the last episode. Like, that was not a role that anyone was asked. Like, they never said that that doing the restaurant service was part of the challenge.
Right.
Maybe it was and it just didn't get aired that they said that was part of it. But John also did like a bad job at it.
Yeah, he was – why every – this season so far, every time someone gets immunity, they do really badly at whatever it is they set their mind to.
Yes.
It's pretty crazy. What else jumped out? This – I think this group stumbled a bit more.
Uh-huh.
Carla being kind of the biggest like – I guess the biggest point of focus in the kitchen, especially. Yeah. So I felt bad though, because early on, then we in the dinner service, we see squab after squab coming back, or the feedback coming back that it's undercooked. And then, of course, when they serve it to the judges, now it's overcooked because she's like taking that feedback into account. But I don't know. That was like, oh, God. I who's to say that like it wouldn't have been bad had it been undercooked? Or, you know, who was to say it wouldn't have been undercooked?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. But that I sort of chalked up to editing. Like I
– yeah.
It almost was to the show's detriment that they edited it that way, because then it made it seem like, oh, well – she had outside feedback that got in the way of it and she was doing it right.
Yeah.
But my hunch is that it was getting sent back because they didn't like it. And I don't know. This sheer conjecture and then also like pointless. But
Sheldon was like cooking it. What was she doing exactly? Like breaking it down and like seasoning? I couldn't really tell like what her step was in the squab process.
Yeah, I mean, she was definitely cooking it, which
I'm pretty sure she wasn't. Sheldon was cooking it.
No, because she was, are you sure?
Yeah, that was their whole critique at the end. They're like, you need to tell the person that's cooking this, like, to cook it. So she leans into that, like, beautiful copper little kitchen area. Oh,
you're so right. Yes.
Yeah. So he's cooking it. I don't know. I mean, I think she's just breaking them down. I don't know, but.
Yeah, which also apparently was not well done. Like, a not properly
done.
She only tasted
one also, which was, like, a big point of
drama.
CJ in the same kind of camp.
Shish kebab. Super
under-seasoned. The lamb was a little mealy. Oof.
Yeah, he sous vide it, which is not a technique that existed until like the 90s.
Yeah.
And so they were like, why would you do that technique on this dish that didn't even exist when like they were making it?
Right.
And then, okay, we have.
Well, let's talk about like the tale of the simplicity. So we have Josie and Kristen both were sort of like given very simple dishes. Mm-hmm. One did it really well and one really didn't. Josie had the gargantuan potato. Kristen had the mushrooms, and then she helped with the fried onions. I was pretty shocked that we didn't hear, like, more complaints on Josie's potato. Like, I feel like if you do a bad baked potato, it's sort of like
– how do you fuck up a baked potato?
Yeah, like, there's not, like, a ton of margin to, like, make a baked potato excellent anyways, but I don't know. I was kind of surprised we didn't linger on the potato more, but
– yeah, I mean, I think honestly there were – because a baked potato is such like an innocuous food, and as you said, like the margin for it to be really good or really bad is so small that the other dishes that were bad were like they messed up something that should not be messed up.
Yeah.
That's not really an articulate way of saying it.
Going home for a baked potato. That actually might be the worst thing to go home for of this menu.
Yeah.
Maybe mixed vegetables.
I think mixed vegetables or even like mushrooms would be like any of these super small side dishes. But let's talk about the mushrooms because, okay, mushrooms are Tom Colicchio's favorite food. We know this. He talks about it all the time. In some seasons, there will be a whole mushroom challenge. And so I think that in general, if you make mushrooms that make Tom happy, you're in a good place.
Yeah.
Because he likes people, you know, to respect the mushroom. And so he was like, she clearly knows what she's doing with this, which like strikes a chord with him. And he's like, this girl is staying and she is winning because she did it really well.
Yeah.
I wonder if Tom Colicchio's favorite food were something else with the mushrooms had been the winning dish.
People were pretty jazzed about them at the table.
Yeah, they were. I mean, she talked about how she like baked them before but she sauteed them.
No, I agree. I agree with you. Like, I feel like – I think that's a very fair point. There is more interesting food on this menu that I feel like should have just kind of won by default had someone not had such a passion for mushrooms. But mushrooms are very
– they are hard to make.
Great. Yeah.
You made delicious mushrooms.
Thank you. It takes a while because you need to cook for the water to go out. And I think she just did it in the oven. But, yeah, I think – you just have to have time. Let's talk dessert. This course was actually fun and sort of, with the exception of maybe like Lizzie's and the potato, like felt the most like of a time.
Yeah, these desserts, we were not alive in the 50s, but when I saw them, I was like, whoa, those would not be served today.
Okay, Danielle and Eliza kind of handled the dessert. So Danielle did the Royal Hawaiian Supreme, which was like a pineapple parfait. There was like a few parfaits and a sherbet and some vanilla ice cream. So Danielle did that, and then she did the vanilla ice cream. Eliza did mint sherbet and the frozen Hawaiian parfait.
Yep.
If you had to eat one of these.
I knew that was coming. I would say either – I don't like pineapple, so I would immediately eliminate those two. Right. And so either the vanilla ice cream or the mint sherbet.
Yeah, I probably am just going to do the vanilla. Mint sherbet is like strange to me.
It was
so
electric green.
Yeah, but I do love that.
Which I think was the point. I think Eliza also did dessert in the last elimination challenge. I think she did those like mint chocolate bars.
She did.
That were bad.
Okay, so we can't say that it's a secret weapon.
I don't think it's her secret weapon. Yeah. I don't think we've found anyone on this season yet who dessert is their secret weapon.
Yeah.
No.
Honestly, Danielle's like the only one even tracking towards it. With her showing today.
I agree with that, but I would not say it's a weapon.
But these felt very fun and like very of the moment. And I think it was it must have felt good for them to know that their plates brought joy.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah, in the stress of the whole meal.
I also think that, like, these were quite possibly the least imaginative desserts we've ever seen on Top Chef.
Yeah.
And it's only because they were on the menu. Like, if yeah. they had served these desserts in any other challenge, they would have been eliminated for them. But I think it was like they did execute these exactly as they would have appeared on this menu. And so even though they're shit, they're going to get
it. Really interesting. Like, I hadn't really thought about how just the quality of this meal was probably just artificially low for Top Chef.
Yeah.
Because of the challenge. And yeah. Wow. Well, we'll have to check out the restaurant when we're never in
state. Yeah. When we never go to the Pacific Northwest, you can go without me. I'm curious what, like, a Michael Voltaggio would have done with this challenge. Because what's interesting is none of them did contemporary takes on these dishes. They all recreated them as they were, which, again, makes me think, like, they were told, no, you're not supposed to innovate these. You're supposed to make them as is.
Yeah.
Because, like, if Michael Voltaggio were in there, you know he would have, like, torn up the menu and done something crazy and been like, by the end of eating the meal, you'll have experienced a potato in 8 forms.
Yeah, the whole, like, put your twist on it was not part of the instructions.
Which honestly made this challenge quite boring to me.
Yeah, I think it could have been more interesting with that flair, for sure. Now that, yeah, upon second viewing. So let's talk about tops and bottoms.
Tops and bottoms. So we're getting 4 and 4.
Nice.
The other thing that's really interesting is they're doing it just right at the dinner table.
Yeah.
In later seasons, you have to wait. Yeah.
But I'll bite my tongue because there is a future episode where they do make them wait, and it's kind of the worst one ever to make them wait.
Yeah.
Okay, but talk to us about the top four.
On the top, we have Lizzie with her herring. We have Kristen with her mushrooms and onions. We have Tyler with his seafood salad or like crab salad. We have Stefan with the liver.
Mm-hmm. My favorite quote was how they said to Lizzie, quote, loved the audacity of the saltine. It's like, I would title this that for this ep.
The audacity of the saltine.
If it wasn't important to like note that this was the 1950s one.
Yeah, and they all did great. Kristen gets her win for the mushrooms and onions. They were like, best fried onions I've, a perfect onion ring. I really want to try these onion rings. They did look deloish.
Deloish. And then bottom. Okay, so reminder, this was a double elimination. So
why
we had,
do you think it was a double elimination?
I think because they just had started the season with so many people.
So many chefs.
Yeah, and and they just had to like burn
through.
There
was no logic for it at all.
No, there really wasn't. I think they just needed to get the numbers down. And maybe I'm trying to think like what let's talk about that next week to see maybe the challenge for the next week's episode doesn't work with an odd number, an even number. I don't know. Maybe that there's something to that.
Curious. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know.
Noted.
So we have Chrissy. Her salad was soggy, overdressed. Carla, the squab was overcooked. CJ, there was no flavor in the pilaf. And then Josh was super salty, and I liked the critique that they made of his. So obviously there was some stuff that was out of his control. Well, as he made the case for, some of this was like an expediter issue where like the soup was cold. But it was also salty. And one of the comments that one of the brothers made was that it's not very like table side friendly, and that it was really difficult to cut with the bread. There was no knife.
And like you shouldn't need a knife with your soup.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Like fundamentally, that is a dish that is meant to be eaten with a spoon.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was the choice of the bowl. Because normally French onion soup comes in this very contained.
Yeah, you want to keep like, the heat in. Yeah.
And so the
surface area.
Yeah, the surface area, the crostini with the cheese on top is like completely fills the opening to the soup.
Yeah.
And so that's why it is so good. And that's why you're able to dig into it, yada, yada. And this was just like essentially a crouton and then floating in the middle of a soup.
Yeah. And I mean, both him, both Josh and CJ were like not going down without a fight. Like there was a lot of talking back, which now we've learned, I think, was this, who are we talking to that said like, actually Tom loves to when they talk back. Was it Charlotte?
Oh, I think it was Charlotte. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, no, he actually loves when people are like disagreeing and like kind of like fighting it out at judges' table, which we were pretty shocked by. But so he must have loved this because there was a lot of it.
I will say the men on this season have a mouth on them. All of them. Yeah,
they really do.
There is not a quiet one in the bunch with, I guess, the exception of Sheldon. Yeah.
But like, and Tyler's very nice. Tyler's so nice.
Tyler's nice. But
and that's not to say these people can't be nice too. They just are mouthy at judges' table.
They're really mouthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
It's kind of wild. But yeah, so unfortunately, we see Chrissy and Carla eliminated.
Depar. I'm not going to lie. I actually thought Carla lasted a lot longer for some reason. And so when I was actually surprised, I was like, oh, wow, okay, she is going. Okay.
Goodbye.
So, okay, soggy salad.
And the squab.
Squab. I don't know that I'm eating either of those. Maybe the salad.
As, now that we've adjusted the rules to this, as they were prepared, no, yeah. I did not want those dishes.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little about where they are now. So Carla Pellegrino, of Rayo's fame, went on to live in Las Vegas, where she opened up a ton of restaurants. Mm. I think she opened like 5 different restaurants. Most recently, a restaurant called Limoncello. She then moved to Texas, where she recently this year opened up a restaurant called Teatro in Grapevine, which is an Italian restaurant. So she's getting back to her roots. She also won an episode of Beat Bobby Flay. So she's had a really fun career since Carla. Top Chef. Chrissy has taken like a really interesting route. So she's no longer a restaurant chef. She has a show called The Grocery List Show, which is like a food documentary series that she produces. She works in R&D, research and development, for a company called Tovala Food, which is kind of like a meal kit, but it has a special like oven. Mm. So when you buy the oven and it comes with like these meal kits that you cook. And so I guess she does R&D for the recipes. And finally, she is the co-founder of a company called Stella Granola, which was actually just last week featured on the Today Show.
Wow. So that's
like a newer brand. Fun. She's working on it. And that's where Carla and Chrissy are now.
Love that. Wait, what's the granola called? I'm always like looking for the next
Carled. Granola. It's called Stella Granola.
Stella Granola. When you find a great granola, you don't look back. Because it's such a I just find that some granola, like, it can be too sweet or too cloying. I found some granola that has like amazing like salt level in it. Oh, it's really good. Anyways, okay.
I remember when I was a kid, my mom told me that granola pulled out her fillings in her teeth. And so we never had granola in the house. I'm not a granola gal. I like it, but I don't like seek it out.
Yuck. Okay.
Yuck. Thanks. Astute, interesting commentary about many things over there, Bits.
Sorry, I'm already thinking like, wow, what is my judgy table this week? Because I feel like we kind of were judgy.
Oh, I've got one episode. But my phone is charging in the other room. Are you able to pull up a timer for me?
Kicking off the timer. This is Nancy's.
Kicking off the timer.
Judgy table starts now.
Vanilla ice cream sucks. Don't even get me fucking started on this. Not only is vanilla ice cream not a standalone dessert, but it also should not be served with any other dessert. And yes, I'm looking at you, pie. Pie should be served with chocolate ice cream. I'm looking at brownies a la mode. Should be served with chocolate or mint chocolate chip or maybe a raspberry sorbet. Vanilla ice cream adds nothing. And everyone's going to come at me and be like, if it's fresh vanilla with like from the pod, all that shit. I just don't care. I don't think vanilla ice cream is worth it. I have never been tempted by a scoop of vanilla ice cream, and it is certainly not a standalone dessert. My gosh. That is my judgy table.
Well said. Well said. I support it. Like, I don't have strong of feelings on ice cream. It's not my preferred, like, sweet. It's sort of, I'm with you. It's like, there's like 20 things I'd pick before it.
Vanilla Ice just brings nothing to the party. And anyone who goes to an ice cream shop and gets vanilla, get out of my life.
Yeah, I like chocolate. I think the other thing when you serve ice cream with a dessert, and some people probably like it for this reason, it just is like already melting. I'm like, I don't want to be hurried through this experience, and now you're making me go faster because like I need to either move at a clip or I'm not going to be able to enjoy the ice cream at all. So for that reason, I hate it.
Yeah,
alone.
That's fair. I think I like, you know, the hot dessert, cold ice cream, and it gets a little melty, and that's fine. Like, the temperature difference, it's like on a s'more, I don't like my chocolate melted. I like my chocolate at room temp because it is the texture and temperature contrast that makes it delicious and fun to eat.
I like that it's melting around the edges a little bit, but like, you need the solid bite.
Exactly. Like the roasted marshmallow is melting the chocolate. Like, it is heating it up, but I like my chocolate solid.
Yeah. Yep. True that.
Because also if it's melted, it like oozes out the side and it gets all over your hands and like, oh, we can talk about s'mores another day. I love them.
You know I love them. All right. Yeah. Let's see. What am I going to say today? Honestly, I don't have one.
No judgy table today?
No judgy table. I kind of dunked on this episode for being like the last week episode. So
this episode in general didn't captivate me.
I thought I liked it when I watched it. And then as I've spoken to you about it, I realized I didn't like it.
Yeah, I'm having the exact same experience. Yeah. Okay, well then let's hope for a more interesting episode next week on Compliments to the Chef.
Bye.